out a little new music for our episode number 13.
Yeah, 13. Lucky number 13. This has like a... That's sultry. I like that.
That's nice, right?
Yeah.
It's got a good beat to it.
Yeah. Yeah, right. How's your week, Spence?
Spectacular week. Good week. Very busy week.
Yeah.
A lot of sports. Got to watch a lot of sports this week, which is good.
Yeah.
And we've had kind of an interesting week in compliance.
Yeah, a lot going on. Some compliance rules related. Some things that are not so rules related, but that really impact sports from a newsworthy perspective.
Right. One of those things that we want to talk about is something that we brought up a couple of weeks ago. The Evansville University, and of course you remember their mascot.
Yeah, Evansville is the Duquesnes.
No, the Purple Aces.
Purple Aces.
The Purple Aces.
Holy smoke. Okay. How did they come up with Purple Aces?
I don't know. We'll have to ask.
Let's get someone on the phone from, if you're listening and you're a fan of that school, email us and let us know how the heck they came up with that.
That'd be good.
I'd love to know.
So a couple weeks ago, we found out that the Evansville head coach, the Evansville men's basketball head coach, by the name of Walter McCarty, was put on administrative leave for some Title IX issues. Basically, he was accused of some sexual harassment, sexual action, Title IX violations. And come to find out that the university ended up terminating him. Mm-hmm. And ended up hiring another coach, this other coach started, and he's coaching him now. Now, it's interesting because Evansville, at the time that he was terminated, had just beat number one Kentucky, had their best win of program history, and then all of a sudden now they've lost their last six games, they're falling apart, and I feel bad for the kids.
Yeah.
But I guess from a compliance perspective, what does that do for you if you've got to change a coach mid-season?
Yeah. So a couple of things you got to do is you probably have a staff designation that lists out the whole staff. You got to get a new coach off, a new coach on. You got to get them into your compliance software. You probably either have a Jump Forward or an ARMS or something that you use. You got to make sure the coach's cell phone's connected to that. They know how to use the app if they've never used it. You're going to have to get in front of that coach and give them a little rules education on the do's and don'ts and the policies and procedures of your school. Make sure that they know the rules and how to do it, how we're doing it, that they're not recruiting too early. So you got to scramble and get a new head coach on board, new rules ed program. It's not easy to do. And then integrate them with the student athletes, right? So from an administration perspective, that's going to be hard to do. And that coach has to hit the ground running. It has a lot of pressure to keep winning, keep things going, introduce new plays. That's a really difficult thing all around that happened. I think it's radioactive right now. If you have anything Title IX, discrimination, anything along those lines, any sexual accusations of any kind, it's really bad. And schools are going to come down on that really, really hard.
We don't have very many facts in this case, so it's not like we were able to really get into the legalities of what may be going on. But it is one thing that we'll keep an eye on if there's more information that comes out. We just want to do a quick follow-up on this particular coach.
Yeah.
And the new coach is a former assistant. He was the head coach at Iowa and at Butler.
Yeah.
So it's not like it looks like his name's Todd Licklider. So it doesn't look like he's brand new coming into this.
Absolutely not. And if you lick litter, I mean, you are you're someone that's used to dealing with tough things.
That's right.
That's right.
So bring it in. Okay, now we've had another kind of interesting thing happen this week that's getting a lot of buzz. I know I was watching the game. I think you heard about it right away.
Yeah.
But the end of the Kansas versus Kansas State basketball game. Now, of course, you know both their mascots.
Yeah, so Kansas State Wildcats
right, and
Kansas Jayhawks.
Jayhawks, RockShox Jayhawk.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know why I knew that?
Why do you know that?
Because it's kind of the Eye of the Tiger thing we talked about before.
Okay.
As we get later in the podcast, I get better with the names.
That's smart. Okay.
Right. Good. Yeah.
So at the end of the game, Kansas is up by 20 plus.
Yeah.
They're dribbling the ball out. A Kansas State player comes up and steals the ball.
Yeah.
Goes in for a layup, and the Kansas player takes exception. blocks the guy and kind of stands over the guy.
Yeah.
Kind of in a little bit of a menacing situation. The Kansas State player takes exception to that.
Yeah.
Gets up and a bench clearing brawl ensues.
Yeah. Yeah.
And both teams, what was really interesting to me was after the fight happens, both coaches are taking the players off the field or off the court. And then the refs call them back onto the court and then say everyone's disqualified.
Yeah,
so I don't know why the refs did that, but
yeah,
whatever.
Very procedural.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I guess there was 1 second left and they had to kick everybody off.
Yeah.
So my question for you is from a compliance perspective. So you're at a school, a fight like that breaks out.
Yeah.
You know, if you're there, you're in the compliance department, what are you thinking? I mean, there's no particular NCAA violation per se.
Not per se, although the thing will be is you got to know who was suspended and for what games and how long, because you have an eligibility report that you distribute, and you're going to have to update your eligibility report and make sure the school doesn't miss it and inadvertently start playing a player one game early. That sort of thing. A lot of things fall to the compliance office to be sort of the adult in the room, so to speak. Like, oh, okay, this person's 8 games, this person's 6 games, this person's 12 games. Send that information to compliance. You guys got it, right? You got it. You just let us know when we can start playing our players. So you have a lot of burden in the compliance office to sort of make sure everything's on the up and up. Because if you just inadvertently missed a couple games and said, yeah, everyone's good, they're good to go, and nobody was really tracking it, and all of a sudden the NCAA or the conference, I think, usually hands these down. They come back and say, wait a minute. We said that 6 games and it was 5. And you get this player playing. You're not following our instructions. Now we're going to double it or something like that. So you got to be really careful. So anytime the conference is giving a playing rule or these kind of rules, they're pseudo in the compliance bucket or pocket or advisory role. And compliance offices wear a lot of hats. So even though they don't have to file an NCAA violation because there was a brawl. But if they're playing players that are ineligible per the conference, that could be potentially. And so there's things to think about like that. Just stay organized. Make sure that you communicate with the staff, the coaches, the sport administrators, the athletic director. Everybody's on the same page of who's being held out and for when and when they can go back and what it means. Is it just competition? Is it practice too? That sort of thing. And so as a compliance office, I think you have to wear a lot of hats and you're going to have to educate some people.
Okay. And, you know, it looks like the main violators here, the Kansas player got 12, Silvio D'Souza, he got a 12-game suspension. The main violator for Kansas State, looks like he got an 8-game suspension, James Love. So, you know, I mean, these are serious, you know, right in the middle of conference play.
Yeah.
These are big-time players who are now disqualified for not acting like adults out there.
Yeah, sometimes things can happen, you know. But you have to think about things like that. When I was in compliance at USC, we would spend time thinking about crowd control. When we'd have camps, we'd find out how many security. I was actually in charge of determining how many security people we had at summer camps that would have thousands of people, spectators in the stands. Where can they stand? Where can they go? How many security people do we need at the recruit gate? What if things get unruly at this spot or that spot? So in compliance, you can wear some of those hats to help determine that. Now, you never can anticipate a big brawl breaking out, but maybe you need to have extra security there, because this is the podcast that deals with college sports law, not just the bylaws of the NCAA, but what about the liability of a fan? Let's say a fan was hurt at this game and got caught up in the melee that kept going and went into the stands. Maybe if there was more security there, maybe that would have been toned down a little bit. I don't know. I'm just kind of throwing that out there. But these are things as a major athletic department you want to think about. The safety of your fans, the safety of your players, proper security, locker room access. Talk to your players. If a brawl breaks out, what do? Do you go in the stands, start fighting people? No, you don't. You leave the bench? No, you shouldn't. That kind of stuff. Just have a contingency plan. It's like having an emergency plan in place for an earthquake or power outage, that sort of thing. It's the same idea. Athletic offices that are watching this or administrators, you want to have emergency plans in place. Make sure you're planning for disasters, fights, violence on campus, that sort of thing. It never hurts to have a couple policies in place.
That's really smart. All right. So our next segment is going to be, we're going to the phones.
Going to the phones, we're going to be talking to, I know I say this a lot, but that's why I've selected some of these people and helped kind of get them on board. Brad Chandler from Arizona State University, the Sun Devils, as you knew.
Yes, of course I knew.
What are the Sun Devils' official colors?
So they've got gold, like a maroon.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, maroon and gold. Right, kind of a maroon and gold. Because it's not, sometimes they get mixed up with USC colors, but USC is a cardinal gold.
Cardinal gold, stronger gold.
Yeah, stronger gold, and then more of a reddish as opposed to kind of the purple.
That's right.
So Brad Chandler is like basically associate AD for compliance. He was very high up. He primarily focuses on basketball. He'll talk about some of that. But he's been at Arizona State for a long time. And before that, I think he was at some other big schools. And he's going to talk to us about some of the ins and outs of Arizona State. And
yeah, I can't wait. And this phone call, as it has been for the last few weeks, is going to be brought to us by who, Aaron?
It's going to be brought to us by a great law firm, Welch, Bruin, and Green, which is here in Portland, Oregon. And our law firm does a few different things: workers' compensation, personal injury, social security, disability. And what else do we do?
And we also practice in the area of college sports law.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we can help compliance offices, administrators, do a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. Feel free to give us a call if you have any questions.
Yeah.
You can email us. Our email's right here.
Yeah.
collegesportsattorneys@gmail.com. You can also call us at 503-221-0870.
Yeah.
Or email us. Email you at what?
And you can email me at aprice. It'll be right down there. aprice@wbgatty.com. Could email you
at skelly@wbgatty.com.
Yeah, so there's a lot of ways to get a hold of us. Find us on the website, find us on YouTube, listen to us on Anchor, email us, call us. We're around, we're ready to help. Oh, there it is.
There it is. What does that sound mean?
That means we got a caller on here today. We have the benefit of having one of the compliance folks from Arizona State University, the Sun Devils, in Phoenix, Arizona, or Tempe, Arizona, actually.
Tempe, yeah.
It's in Tempe or Tempe. I'm not sure how you say it.
I think it's Tempe, yeah.
Tempe, yeah. So anyway,
Tempe,
there it is. So that's from the mouth of babes right there. So Brad Chandler is one of my favorite people in the business. I know I say that sometimes when I get these callers on, but that's why I want to talk to these people. And I worked with Brad Chandler when I was at USC doing compliance, and we worked on a lot of different nuanced things, a lot of football questions back and forth, making sure that Arizona State and USC were doing it the same, which there's a comfort, I think, in that. And so we got Brad Chandler that's going to give us a little time on a Friday afternoon as he commutes back from work and then takes care of his family obligations probably, or probably going to go home and work. That's how it works in this business. But Brad, how the heck are you doing, man?
Great. Thanks for having me on. I gotta say, I wanted to put the windows down in the car because it's 75 out right now and sunny. But I'll just, with the volume, and if anyone make you guys, jealous.
Oh, no, I appreciate. Yeah, right. Yeah, right now here in Oregon, I think it's another day. It stopped raining for 10 seconds, but I think it's gonna rain for the next 2 weeks straight. And I think we run in the 40s and 50s and rainy. So we would love to see some sun right now.
Yeah.
So, Brad, this is Spencer. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today. And one thing that we always start when we're interviewing people in the business here is if you wouldn't mind kind of giving us your kind of the history of how you got into compliance and, what led you to work in compliance. So kind of the history behind how you got into compliance and then what led you to get into it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I went to law school. My background is in finance. I went to law school thinking I wanted to do something in tax law, and then got an opportunity to. Someone told me, "Hey, you work in milk sports. Why don't you work with the compliance office in the athletics department?" And I had no clue what that was. Fast forward to my 2-3 L year, and I was starting to apply for jobs in athletic compliance and was working at a firm or working at the court. So got an opportunity to intern at my law school. It's fantastic. And I decided I wanted to I want to work in athletic compliance instead of, your everyday law job. So got an opportunity to work at Ohio State right out of law school. Got hired on right after the Jim Tressel tattoo gate, if you can remember.
Yeah.
Back in 2011. Spent some time at Ohio State, and I've been at Arizona State for the past 6 years. So.
Oh, that's awesome. So what led you to apply to work at Arizona State? Was there any connection there, or was that just some, what led you there? Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those things in college athletics. It's kind of like the assistant coaches, the coaching carousel. It's just sometimes to move up, you got to move out. And so I got an opportunity to kind of get elevated out in Tempe. And so I had to leave the Block O to come out here to the beautiful Southwest.
Hey, yeah, no problems with the weather there. I guess the next kind of question I was wondering about is, kind of, what's your specific title at Arizona State?
So my title is a director of compliance. We report to the Office of General Counsel, so their nomenclature is a little bit different. But it's from like an athletics department world. I'm an associate athletics director of compliance.
Okay.
But you can see a lot of, as you can find, I talk to a lot of folks. The compliance office oftentimes reports outside of athletics, and so that's kind of how it's structured here, just to create some better reporting lines.
How is your office structured, and kind of coupled with that, how big is your office? So, you know, how many people are kind of in your office, and then how is it structured specifically?
So we a lot of people may not know this, but we're second in the nation in major infractions. Only past MU, who just beat us out a couple of years ago with Larry Brown. So over the years, we've gotten we've been fortunate to add staff just because our university, our president, believes in compliance and believes in its importance. So we have 8 full-time staff members. We brought a financial aid person in. We have an eligibility person, and then the rest of the office is really kind of split up by different niche areas. And so we're kind of a hybrid between sport liaisons and also niche areas. You're by bylaws, whether it be personnel, recruiting, amateurism, and what have you.
Okay, and then what are your specific responsibilities? Do you have... I know you're the director of compliance, associate athletic director, but do you have a specific kind of oversight over specific sports, or are you where do you focus in on mostly?
Yeah. So I oversee a lot of our policy or process, kind of our day-to-day operations. What are we doing? What are we working on? The other director of compliance in our office oversees our education efforts. So how are we educating the masses, our different stakeholders? And then over the past 3 years, I've been working most closely with the basketball program. So I've been helping oversee that and serving as their liaison.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, how is the communication going with other Pac-12 compliance offices? Do you guys communicate with them regularly on interps or questions and that sort of thing?
Absolutely. I think it's one of the most important things to have as a compliance officer to have a network, especially in your own conference, that you can run ideas off one another and see kind of best practices, what the conference standard is, instead of having necessarily to go to the Pac-12, their compliance folks. Being able to get put some feelers out there. So I know a couple of football specific guys, they have their own separate, text thread or email thread. I keep in touch with a decent amount of basketball folks around the country just to see what other folks are doing on basketball related specific issues.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you guys use any software at Arizona State to help you, like a jump forward or something like that?
So we've done, we were with ACS, which was rebranded to FiberRush, and now we're with ARMS. So we've kind of, this is our second academic year with ARMS, and it's been fantastic. It's a great program. So we're very happy with it. FiberRush and ACS were great, but our football and academic staff loved using ARMS, so we kind of made the whole switch to the department.
Yeah, well, that's good. Okay, yeah, the only experience I have is jump forward. We used it at USC, and then Oregon State, we were just paper-based. I mean, it was just binders. So I've had it both ways. Sounds like you've only been at Ohio State and Arizona State. Is that right? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I was a GA at Toledo, and then I spent a couple months at Rutgers out east. So, you know, obviously Toledo was as a graduate assistant, I was doing a lot just because you're a one person shop in a GA.
Yeah.
And Rutgers is pretty small too. But then, obviously Ohio State, I think the biggest compliance office of the country. So I kind of got to see what that operation was like.
Yeah, absolutely. So what advice would you have if somebody's right now, we have a lot of listeners, two different types of listeners, really. Some that are, currently in law school or trying to get their first job, and others that are maybe lawyers or have different jobs that they've had for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, but would like to get into compliance maybe or college athletics and don't really know exactly how to go about doing it. So I didn't know if you had advice for those two different, groups. On how to kind of get into doing what you're doing.
Yeah, and I'm sure others have said this. I think the easiest piece of advice is just to somehow, some way, get experience.
Yeah.
And that's if you're able to give up your time on a volunteer basis, fantastic. If you're able to get a graduate assistant position, extern, intern, class credit. Whatever you can do to put in some hours and to learn the business is just, that's how you're going to get a job. And as a hearing, this is such a people-based industry. Everybody knows everybody, every compliance office in the country. There's only a handful of us, a couple hundred of us in the country. So if you want a job, most of the time it's going to be based off of a recommendation and someone calling for you. So somehow, some way, you got to get experience.
Yeah, so just find it however you can get it, volunteer, whatever, get that. And that would probably be, would you have the same advice for somebody that's currently in another career, for 5, 6, 7 years, maybe as an attorney or something, they're in family law and they think, I don't have a huge passion for this. I would like to get into college sports. Any thoughts on how that person could transfer over if they maybe don't have the financial freedom to volunteer maybe necessarily? I mean,
Yeah, and I think that's tough. I think if you're somehow able to create a niche or find a niche that you can help out in the athletic department, that's huge. If you can somehow come alongside athletics and maybe it's pro bono contract work or some pro bono work when it comes to partnerships and writing those agreements up. Maybe it's getting involved just on a higher level when it comes to facilities projects and university-owned assets. If you can somehow get involved in those conversations, create value, show your value to those folks in athletics. Having JDs in your athletics department is huge. And if you ask any AD, they want JDs in their office just because of the level of it sounds cocky, but intelligence, and there's just so many skill sets that we bring as JDs to this big business that is college athletics.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good answer.
That's super helpful. And I think there's a lot of our listeners, we've had some emails recently from people who have said, hey, I'm doing this as a career. How do I get into this? So it seems like the best way to do it is just make connections, right? Make connections and then do anything you can to get your foot in the door. So, So one of the things that we've been talking about recently a lot is this is the new transfer portal. That's been in existence for a couple of years. How does Arizona State both kind of take advantage of the transfer portal? And then what are your thoughts on the transfer portal itself?
So when Herm Edwards, our football coach guy here, he was pretty black and white when it came to his roster. And so I think we probably led the nation with transfer portal players, if you will. We had so many guys in there because Coach Edwards kind of came in and said, hey, you're not going to be part of the roster, or you're not going to move forward, we're going to go a different direction. We'll help you find a place elsewhere, but pretty black and white with them. So it's very interesting to see us use that so much from a departing institution. But our coaches haven't used it all that much from a football standpoint, just outside of grad transfers. My personal opinion on the transfer portal, I think it's great. It's easier for us at the campus level, for us coaches and administrators. Sometimes I think the student athletes get in trouble because they think that the grad's degree or elsewhere. They put their name in the transfer portal, and school then cuts their aid agreement, and then they're kind of left, looking for a school, trying to find anything to land on. So, some of the times there's some negative consequences, and unfortunately, the student athlete left.
Yeah.
What advice do you? Because we understand that once you put your name in the transfer, once you give your name that you want to put your name in the transfer portal to compliance, I think you have 48 hours, right, to put it on the transfer portal. So what advice do you give to student athletes who come to you and say, hey, this is something I'm thinking about doing? Or, do you ask them to tell them to sleep on it? Do you ask, what kind of advice do you give those people?
First and foremost, I just want to make sure that they have a conversation with coaching staff about it. Transparent conversations with coaches about why you want to transfer, what's going on, what your plans are. I think a lot of times, it's crazy to sound, a lot of times it doesn't happen. And so these students come into our office thinking that they want to transfer. If they actually want to fill out the paperwork and put their name in the portal, we'll put their name in the portal within 48 hours, like the rule tells us to. But I would just encourage staff, they should have those conversations with the coaching staff. Just be upfront, be transparent, put it all out on the table, and go from there. And then come back and see if you need to, or if you already had those conversations, then if you want to make.
Yeah. No, that's good. I think it's a good thing myself. It came into play right as I was leaving compliance at USC. It was starting, so I didn't really get to do a lot of the interactions with it. So I've been curious just kind of how it's working. It's funny how there's so many people that know what the transfer portal is now. That's because you see it on ESPN or in the newspapers, right? That'll say, "Oh, so and so entered the portal in the transfer portal," and I thought that was surprising. So people that don't know compliance still know about the portal, right? So. Anyways, whenever it comes to big time transfers, I was curious also, what would you say, or is there anything that's sort of a unique challenge for Arizona State as opposed to maybe some other schools? For example, when I was at USC, we had agents that were 4 miles away and lived in Beverly Hills and Century City, and they were at practices and they were around all the time. And so we had a massive focus on agents being on campus, and kind of access was a big deal. High-profile athletes, we had these big programs. When I was at Oregon State, there was a lot of local kind of restaurants and boosters we had to kind of worry about in a small college town. That was kind of a unique thing with Oregon State and having a small staff. So we had to sort of like bifurcate responsibilities, wear a lot of hats. And what do you think for Arizona State? What would you say is kind of something unique that you guys got to do there to stay on top of things?
Similar to LA, we have a lot of these training facilities and these specialists that are posted up here in the Scottsdale area and the Phoenix area just for the weather. And so you have a lot of those folks wanting to offer their services to our student athletes, to get in touch with our student athletes, just the same way the agents do it. And essentially they serve as runners for agents.
Yeah.
A lot of these training facilities. So I think that's a little bit of a risk area, and it's unique to probably out to maybe Florida and LA, are these training facilities. I wouldn't say we have, like Fort Dallas and like it was like in Columbus, where you have local businesses that want to use these student athletes. It was like this and whatnot. When again, touch these student athletes, we don't have those necessarily risk areas in Tempe, just because the Metro Phoenix area is just such a big in Park Lane area that, college athletics isn't seen that way. I know that may sound a little negative, but it is what it is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Speaking of name, image, likeness, like you touched on, I was just curious, any thoughts you might have initially? I mean, obviously, we don't know how this is going to shake out or what's going to happen. A lot of people smarter than me, at least, are going to kind of, put the working groups together and try to figure it out. But any initial thoughts on that and just that concept of student athletes kind of profiting off their name, image, or likeness?
Cool. That's a heavy topic. I'm really just trying to take a wait and see. That's a true wait and see approach. And
yeah.
You don't have to develop too much of an opinion on it. Because quite frankly, it's likely going to happen, and it's going to move in a direction. And us as compliance officers, all we can do really is just prepare and then adapt. And so there's going to be new risk areas. There's going to be new monitoring activities. There's going to be new things that we do as compliance officers that we've never done before, never had to worry about. So I'm mentally preparing for that, and just knowing that inevitably it's going to come through. It's just a matter of when, not if.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I think you're right. I think it's just the waves come, and you just got to figure out how do you maintain that amateurism model. And compliance offices, I just feel like the work's going to go up a little bit. They're monitoring-wise, it's going to be tricky, especially initially, until they can figure it all out. But, that should be interesting. I don't know. What do you think, Spence?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens, both kind of from the legalities, the legalities of what the ability for that student-athlete to go out and profit from that.
Yeah.
What role does the school play? What role does the athlete play?
Yeah.
If there are going to be agents involved to can make these connections.
Yeah.
I mean that, like Brad said, that it may be kind of a wait and see approach to see what kind of rules the NCAA puts down on these student athletes before we can really comment too much about it.
Yeah.
Mark Emmert put out his state of the NCAA today and said, we're working on it, but didn't really give any specifics. So it's kind of that wait and see approach.
Yeah. There's not much to know, I guess, right now. So Brad, do you travel with basketball on a lot of trips?
Yeah. I was actually stuck in your area, about a week or two ago.
Oh yeah.
Playing Oregon pool.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. So do you go on every trip or just the ones you can afford to get to?
I've gone on everyone this far for men's basketball.
Okay.
I think I'm going to skip a trip with the Washington trip, but other than that, I'll be with them all year long.
Well, now Arizona State's head coach is Bobby Hurley, right? Isn't that right?
That's correct.
Yeah, and so, he was a high-profile player at Duke, and then, got hurt before he really did anything in the NBA, but he's a big-time name. So what's it like kind of dealing with him who was in the NCAA for a long time, was a high-profile athlete, and now is a coach? I mean, is it as far as kind of instructing him with the rules and regulations, does he kind of already know everything? What's your interaction with him like?
Yeah, Bobby's fantastic. What's nice is because he was such a high-profile college athlete, he kind of gets it. He gets the risks. He gets what our student athletes go through. Anything that I'm calling him that I've heard that he has potential issues or problems or something we need to look out for, he understands it. He gets it. He's willing to work with me. So we have a great working relationship. He cares about the clients. And so we're in good shape. And he's actually a pleasure to work with. It's very difficult for basketball coaches to have to keep his face nowadays, but he keeps on it fantastically, and I really enjoyed working with him.
That's cool. Yeah, Arizona State's got two high-profile coaches in Bobby Hurley and then Herm Edwards, who, he went into Arizona State. And, I mean, like Brad said, he made things pretty black and white. He said, this is the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, my experience was when I would deal with, I worked football at USC and football at Oregon State too. Mike Riley and Clay Helton. But when you're dealing with, seven-figure coaches and you have to kind of keep them in line. A lot of them want to follow the rules. That's been my experience. They want to, but they also want to maximize their opportunities and make sure they're doing whatever some other school is doing. And I found that hard because the rules sometimes can be gray, and you might feel comfortable allowing a coach to do something another school's not, and vice versa, and getting that on the same page. And so I don't know if you ran into that before, Brad, but we're like, maybe you'll give an interp that maybe is a little more restrictive, and then someone on staff will say, well, this school is doing it, and you probably run into that from time to time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we hear it every day. But you know, I get that the coaches, they don't want to be at a disadvantage in any area, especially when it comes to recruiting. So if they see something that a coach is doing that presents a competitive recruiting advantage, I get it that they want to be able to do that stuff too. But, you know, our job is ultimately to protect the university, and we're going to advise coaches what they should be doing within the NCAA rules, and we're never going to tell them it's okay to break a rule. So, unfortunately, they may not like an interpretation we give them, but, you know, our interests are protecting the university, and so we're going to do our best, but, you know, sometimes it's going to end up a no.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Brad, you know, I know you're a busy man. We'll let you get back to the family and stuff here. I guess one thing I was curious about is if you care to share it, what are your ultimate goals down the road? You want to stay in compliance, or you have goals to get outside of compliance? And or I'm just curious about that.
You know, I wasn't in a position to look too far down the road. I tried to cut my life too far down ahead and just let things come through, but yeah, I love college athletics. Like we were talking about the name, image, like this stuff. I'm a purist. I believe in the amateur as a model, in the purity of college athletics. And so I love working in it. So however long I can stay in college athletics, doing whatever, that's what I'm here for.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Brad. We really appreciate your time. Hope you have a wonderful Friday evening and good weekend. And, we'll be cheering for the Sun Devils for the rest of the year and on, okay?
All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. Thanks for your time, man. Really appreciate it. Have a good weekend. We'll keep in touch.
Yeah, you too. See you guys.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was a spectacular interview with Brad.
Yeah, Brad's a good guy. He's been around the biz a long time. You know, he's been at Toledo, like you said, Ohio State.
Of course, you know Toledo's mascot.
Sure, the Toledo Wolverines.
Golden Rockets?
Golden right. Rockets.
That's right.
Okay, that makes total sense. That's I mean, right. When you think Toledo, you think Golden Rockets.
For sure, of course.
You know, what are their colors?
Blue and yellow. And if you saw their helmets, you'd know them right away.
Toledo. I know some people at Toledo. Toledo's a good place. That's where he learned, you know. But now he's been at Arizona State. He's been at Ohio State. He's been at big programs, small programs. We heard a little bit about the structure of Arizona State, 8 people full-time. They take compliance very seriously at Arizona State.
That's the biggest office of anybody we've interviewed so far.
Yeah, so far. You know, it's one of the bigger ones. I think in the Pac-12, my experience has been compliance offices run between 4 people and 7 people, most compliance offices. Arizona State's 8. I think USC's 10, 12. You know, UCLA might be 7, 8, 9, right in there. One of the smaller ones actually is Oregon, which is really surprising. Oregon has 4 compliance officers.
Interesting.
Yeah, which is so, you know, but it's different, you know, different procedures and policies. But it was really good to hear some insight of how they do things there at Arizona State.
Yeah, really great. And so kind of end the podcast today, I want to just kind of touch on real briefly.
Yeah.
Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA, gave kind of a state of the NCAA address today.
Actually. Yeah.
And in his, or I guess it was yesterday, but in his discussion, he really talked a lot about this name, image, likeness, kind of the changes that they're going to be making in that. One of the things he kind of focused on was saying, hey, this is something that's happening. But he kind of hinted that it was going to be something that the universities were going to have to kind of control.
Yeah.
And, you know, we kind of talked about that a little bit with Brad. Mm-hmm. I mean, what, mm-hmm. you know, if the university's controlling this and there's going to be rules and regulations. What does that mean for the compliance department?
Well, I think what that's going to do is it's going to make the compliance offices grow. They've been growing over the last 10 years or so. Compliance offices are paying more. They're growing their staff because they're realizing this is becoming more and more complex as time's going on. And I think this is just going to add one more wrinkle. And I think compliance offices are going to get one or two more people bigger. And it's going to be more work for the compliance office. And it's going to be basically a wait-and-see approach, kind of like Brad said. Let's find out what the rules are. Let's see how it plays out, and we'll react and adapt to that. Because we don't know yet, you know, how this is going to work. But it's going to be a lot of onus on the institutions. And that's going to be hard, you know. And so we'll see how that shakes out. But it's going to be big changes. You know, the NCAA is saying the right things. Rules are coming. Things are coming. Changes coming. But now institutions, it's up to you guys to make sure the model is protected.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to talk to you is about your sweatshirt. Is that a new sweatshirt?
No, so I've had this one for a while, but this was team issued. I have a lot of team issued gear from USC. I did not bring all of it. Donated some of it when I left USC because I had a whole entire closet full of sweatshirts and hoodies and gear and sweatpants and shoes and I worked with equipment while I was at USC, and so this sweatshirt here was team-issued gear.
It's a nice sweatshirt.
And, yeah, dry fit, fits me well, washes nice. And so, yeah, that's I decided today I'm gonna bring this out and represent.
Good.
You know what I mean? How are you? What do you got here?
So today I'm wearing my University of Arkansas.
See it there. Oh, yeah.
At Monticello.
Yeah.
It says, fear the bull weevil. There's the bull weevils.
Bull
One of my
weevils.
Favorite mascots. and so, you know, hashtag bull weevils, so you're okay.
Absolutely. Now, here's what I'm always interested in. That's a great mascot. Who roundtabled that? I would love an answer from anyone that's listening. And said, you know what?
We're going to be the bull weevils.
Yeah, we're the bull weevils. That's what our school's about. Right? So that's fantastic.
My cousin actually has this exact same shirt. He lives in Germany. He wears it proudly. So you've got bull weevils have international fans.
Yeah, absolutely. As they should.
Yeah, okay. And then we're right in the middle of college basketball.
Yeah.
So how's USC's season going so far?
USC's doing well. You know, they went to double overtime at Oregon. Oregon is hard to win for anybody in any sport, especially football and basketball. The crowd's nuts. There's, you know, in Eugene, that's a college town. They support their teams like crazy. They show up early. They yell loud. It's not an LA wine and cheese crowd that comes in late, leaves early, is quiet, and they're texting and talking on the side. They're into the game, and so they impact the game. And they change their court to be some strange antelopes or trees or whatever those are.
They're trees.
Yes. Yeah, some forest. It's cheating, but it's nice, whatever. So they cheat with the floor.
What are your feelings, really?
Yeah, right. And they took them to double overtime. But USC is going to be a good team this year. I think they're 15-4. I anticipate them winning about 24 games. And I think they're going to be a bubble team. They're going to get into the tournament, maybe be 11 or 12 seed. And surprise them. I think they're going to win a game in the tournament, too.
All right.
They're a good team.
They're good. Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So they'll hang on there. They got the Beavers on Saturday.
Good game.
They're going to beat the Beavers.
Okay.
I think they're going to beat them by 15. You know, put them away.
UCLA just beat the Beavers in Corvallis on Thursday.
Yeah, so Beavers are in trouble right now. Okay. Yeah. What about BYU?
BYU's having a pretty good season, better season than we've had over the last few years.
Yeah.
We've had a couple of stud players. We played the Pacific, you know, Pacific, of course, they're my
Tigers.
Tigers, yes, you knew that one.
Yeah, I had a shirt from Pacific. Yeah, absolutely.
And
you know, I knew that because Pete Carroll used to coach there.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And so they played them, beat them last night by 14, and now we've got San Francisco on Saturday, another big game. But BYU is a kind of similar to USC, kind of a bubble, bubble team, probably in right now.
Yeah.
And as long as they don't have any bad losses, they should be in.
What's the furthest BYU's win in the tournament that you're aware of?
First they went was when Danny Ainge was there.
Okay.
And they made it to the Elite Eight.
Oh, Elite Eight.
Yeah, when Jimmer Fredette was there, they made it to the Sweet 16.
Wow, okay.
So it'd be nice. I think BYU could potentially win a game.
Yeah.
You know, probably going to be an 8-9, 7-10 type game. So we're going to have to play a high seed in the second round.
Yeah, yeah.
If we win the first round. So it's going to be tough for us to get much further than the 32. But we'll see. We'll see. You never know.
You know, my family knows Doug Ainge, Danny Ainge's brother.
Wow.
They went to high school with him and were friends with him at North Eugene High School.
Right.
And so, yeah, they hung out in high school, knew each other, the whole thing. So it's kind of, there's a little Ainge connection right there.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
Danny Ainge is revered as an athlete at BYU.
He is. I've been on BYU's campus. I saw his jersey there, and it was a shrine. It looked really good.
Yeah. Well, he's one of our favorites.
So. Yeah. And then I got punched in the face by a BYU fan. Those guys are rabid.
You did not get punched in the face.
They're a good group of people.
Well, you got free ice cream.
I got free ice cream. It was great. And I got an epic loss that I dealt with. But they treated me with respect.
Yeah. Even I treated you with respect as you were driving everybody home.
You did. You did. Absolutely.
Hey, well, we hope that everybody has a great weekend this weekend.
Yeah.
Enjoy some college basketball. You got the Pro Bowl this weekend. Don't know how many people are going to be watching that, but then the Super Bowl next weekend.
Yeah, the Super Bowl or the big game or whatever they make you say. But the next week, we got a big podcast coming up, too. I want to tease it.
Oh, okay. What do we got coming up?
So in the next couple of weeks, we're going to have Oregon State University, the Beavers. We're going to be talking to them. And then BSK Law Firm, which is one of the – probably the nation's leading sports law firm right now.
For sure.
And they do a lot of the major cases. Mike Glazer, one of their managing attorneys, handled one of Oregon's high-profile cases with Chip Kelly and that sort of thing. And so we got some cool people we're going to be talking to coming up.
Awesome. All right. Well, we hope everybody has a good weekend. Enjoy your weekend, college sports fans.
See ya. Thank you.